up right now. Kicking off the show.
Now, Fox Sports 1280 Rochester and Salvatores.com present Kick This, the Soccer Sam Show. Brought to you by Salvatore's Old Fashioned Pizzeria. Go to Salvatores.com. Arthur Treacher's Fish and Chips. It's Fishalicious. Donuts Delight at Empire and Culver. Open for breakfast at 6 a.m. every day. Palmer's Direct to You Market. 1872 Cafe. 431 West Main Street. A Coffee Revolution. The Western New York Flash. Speedy Slice. Home of the $2 Speedy Slice. Now. Now.
3, 2, 1.
Live from the Fox Sports 1280 studios in downtown Rochester, this is Kick This.
It's the second hour of Kick This. We call it Word on the Street. My name is Jeff DeVeronica for the Democrat and Chronicle. And in studio for a few minutes is my co-host, Soccer Sam. Special in-studio guest. He's the biggest one we've had this summer for sure. He is a legend in Rochester in broadcasting and in civic duty from 13 Wham TV, Mr. Don Elhart. Welcome to our studio,
great
sir.
Great to be here. Good to see you.
Want to talk about your career, of course, celebrating 50 years on the air last month and still going strong. We'll talk about from bright spots to TV news and how we cover things in the media these days. But, Sam, I know you have, as a grandparent, Don is a grandparent, yeah. You have to run off to soccer tryouts, but I wanted to give you the mic first here.
Don, I just want to say I'm a fan for 50 years watching you, and I'm just honored. I wanted to say I was able to be in the same studio with you for at least 30 seconds. So,
oh, it's a pleasure for me just to meet you finally. We've crossed paths over the years, and obviously a lot of things on the air, but just to have a chance to greet you and see your grandkids here today, what a wonderful day.
Wishing Santino luck at tryouts.
Yes,
right?
I told my grandson, just pretend he's from Italy and he'll be fine, because you know usually these coaches want these foreign players, yeah. So he'll be fine. But Don, thank you again for being part of the show, and I read the article that Jeff did on you. It was huge. It was a great story. And
you made it to the end, yeah. I know you.
I'll be watching on Monday night, sir.
All right, good to talk to you.
I wanted to have you in, Don, because obviously you're celebrating an anniversary this year, and we'll talk about Guinness and all that stuff too. But to me, it was interesting because I was like, you know, he usually is operating off a script all the time, right? You don't have, I know you have pockets of time during the show to say what you feel and say hello and shout outs and all that stuff and T-shirts. But I thought, you know what, we've got, without commercials, you know, 45 minutes to sit and talk. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you just about, how's your summer going? How is, I know obviously there's been some 13 news, been in the news with some of the reporters.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that. But the gala was really interesting, celebrating 50 years on the air on June 6th. Having that moment on the air, the tributes, the gala, how did that impact you, your mind and your feelings?
It is. You kind of walk through it in a daze, I think. The date was coming, and I've spent so much time the last few years telling people, well, it's coming up on 50 years. Pretty soon it's going to be 50 years on the air. And all of a sudden it was there. And it's it was kind of like just a blur when I look back on it now. A lot of great tributes. In fact, I'm just beginning to write some of the thank you notes now that for so many people who did so much and worked so hard to honor me. So I think there's one little telling sign. On the day of the 50th, June 6th, someone sent me 4 helium balloons. They are in the newsroom. They are still in the air.
Wow.
I don't know.
I don't know what
kind of helium is in there. So I said, in a way, it's kind of, I guess that's symbolic of the career, you know. The balloons are still up, so as long as the balloons are there and for a little while longer, because people ask that. I think that's what it triggers, I think, in a lot of people's minds. Well, you've done 50 years. When are you going to retire? When are you going to step down? And I tell people now, just a few more years. As I've told you before, I think there's an opportunity for me to kind of gradually back away from what I'm doing, so I don't have to quit cold turkey, because I still enjoy what I do.
Yeah, and that's the key to it, really, right? I mean, 72 years old, and I was fascinated to learn about how you stay in shape, and I'd love you to share with our listeners a little bit about that, because you know, it's important. And I'm in my late 40s now, and I have to start really focusing more on that. And you can't just take stuff for granted anymore.
I got a kick. I was listening on the way in to all of the conversation and the soccer talk and everything else. And that was my career in high school on the soccer team at Benfield. George Stites never cut anyone on the team. So we had probably the largest squad of any soccer team. The one thing I could do was kick a corner kick.
And those are important with George because he used to sub in. I've heard about this. It was, folks, it was like a basketball team. All the tall guys in high school soccer, you can sub as much as you want. So all the tall guys, you know, would sub in for the corner kick and try to score off the corner.
And that's all I could do. I mean, I was a little overweight. I was not in good shape. So I remember the first time he sent me in and I kicked the corner kick and I ran down, sat back on the bench. Well, George Stites would always have 11 guys on the field, sometimes maybe
12
once in a while. I don't give them away, but he looks out there, he counts 10 people, and he goes, "Alhard, where are you?" And I jumped up, "Right here, coach." When he went, "Get back on the field. You can't come off till they blow the whistle."
It's like special team. It was like special teams in football.
But I got a kick out of that because most of the time was on the bench, and most of my sports career, as we've talked about before.
But swimming, you're a swimmer too.
A little swimmer, but most, and that's why I run, because that's my own little world. I compete with myself. I'm very disciplined. I try to do 6 days a week. I will do that. In fact, I was debating, you know, coming down here this morning saying, all right, should I stop over at the JCC on the way home and run indoors? Or, well, maybe it's not so bad outside, so I'll go home and run outdoors. But try to do that 6 days a week. But it's the one thing I can do that's all my own. I don't have to compete with people. Once in a while on the track, you know, you get a few people that will challenge you a little bit, but for me, it's kind of a personal discipline, I think, to try to keep in shape.
I read something, and this is interesting to me at least, is rock star named Paul Stanley from the band Kiss. Mm-hmm. He's got to be in his 60s now. He runs, I think it's a mile, he's been running a mile a day, that's it, for 30, 50, 40 years. That's it. And that's enough to keep his metabolism up and going. Obviously, you're in an industry where we've talked about, in the story we talked about, how, you know, you had days where no sick days.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want, again, there's nothing, and I got any wood to knock on here. But you said, you know, if you were in a different career where you had to get up and get out of bed and you had to be at the office at 8:30 in the morning, you probably would have had a couple sick days.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the beauty of working at nights, and it's, I don't say beauty because obviously there's a lot of challenges, family life, and that type of thing. But when you don't really have to get to work till 3:30 or quarter of 4 or 4 o'clock, you do have that day to kind of regroup, get in shape. There are days where I would wake up and say, I don't feel that great. But I'll go out, I'm going to force myself to run 2.5 miles, and by the time I'm done, I felt a lot better and went into work, and that was it. Just this week, I had an implant, you know, go to the dentist in the morning. I said, well, let me schedule this at 8:45 so the Novocaine wears off the time I get to work. And, you know, and have the implant done and, you know, have that little screw put in there and the tooth a little bit later on. But again, if I was working on a morning shift, you'd have to at least take a half a day or so to do that.
We're talking with Don Alhart, associate news director and a longtime anchor, obviously, at the 13 WHAM TV. Started at the studio 50 years ago when it was not far from where we're sitting now. What was the news industry like back then? And again, we can touch on this. How have you been able to keep up with the changes? Because obviously it is light years different.
Yeah, when I look back, I mean, I look out now over the downtown landscape here. We were 17 Clinton Avenue South, 4 people in the news department when I started. We had a news director. Dick Burt was anchoring. Joe Palladino was our one photographer, and I started out as what was called a reporter photographer. Ironically, we're back to that now. We call them MMJs, the
one man band, right?
One man bands that go out, and I watch the young women now go out in their high heels and put the camera on their shoulder, and they come back. They not only write the story, they have shot the story, they've done the video. Jenna Cottrell last night did a great story on the Simpson Cup coming up at Oak Hill, and I was complimenting the photography. I did that. So she shot the story, she wrote the story, she puts it together. And we kind of did that years ago with film. So I had a chance to watch all of this. You know, we really expanded over the years. And I think that was the one thing that kept me here, the challenge of kind of growing with the business.
What was interesting to me, and I think it's a great lesson for young journalists, really young people in any industry they want to go into, is you had a chance to learn everything when you were Channel 8, right?
Yeah. I was thinking this morning, driving down here, I'm listening to 1280 AM, and that is one of the first stations I ever worked for as an engineer.
It was 1280?
Yeah, it was 1280. When I was at WROC in the summer of 62, they had in that one building on Humboldt Street, the station, which was then Channel 5, it was moving to Channel 8 that summer. So Channel 8 was the television station. 1280 was the AM radio station.
Mm-hmm.
What is now PXY was their FM station. So they had all three under one roof. So I had a chance as a summer relief engineer to work on the radio. Gary Smith was the disc jockey. We've talked about Joe Cullinane, who would do the Red Wings baseball games.
Yeah, play-by-play guy, yeah.
Play-by-play, but if it was in the studio. If they had a game out of town, he would be in the studio on Humboldt Street looking at the ticker wire and recreating in his mind and on the air a play-by-play.
He didn't do the bat hitting.
Had a little bat. He had a little bat.
Wood
he had
hitting
a little,
wood.
He had a little. He had the wood. He had a little mitt, and he would make that little sound. And I, as an engineer, would be the crowd noise. So if a guy got a hit, I'd bring the pot up and make the cheers come out. You would literally create in people's minds the baseball game. So I had a chance to do that as an engineer. Work on the television side in the control room, run the studio cameras for Tom Decker and Bob Mills, and run the audio board. It was, for a young person at that time, the most valuable experience I could get. Not only running the equipment, but getting to know the people and the personalities. The engineering side, which I really like to think has enabled me within the business to communicate with coworkers, because you understand what they're doing.
What they're going, their challenges
are. Yeah, you understand their challenges. And if you have, if you walked in their shoes, it's a lot easier to work with people.
And I think that's important, because I think young people now want it all.
Yeah.
They want everything right now. They want the high-paying job, the best hours. And in this industry, you need to really do an apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying work for free, but you need to learn the job before you're thrown into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the fire can get really hot these days, we know, from in the news industry.
Yeah.
We're going to touch on that. We're talking with Don Elhart. Let's take our first break, Don, and we'll come back, talk more with you about your career. We will welcome your calls. I think he is a civic treasure. We'll talk about the Rotary, his impact there over the years. Also, 222-1280 is our number. This is Word on the Street, and we're talking with Don Elhart from 13 WHAM. My name is Jeff DeVeronica from the Democrat and Chronicle, and you're listening to Fox Sports 1280.
You hear that passion?
The passion.
That's a passion for Rochester sports, unrivaled on the radio.
We care.
There's a passion involved. Fox Sports 1280 Rochester.
I think it's better.
New stuff pops up all the time.
What is that?
Let's just hope this is a more pleasant surprise than that rash you brought home last night. Fox Sports 1280 Rochester.
Fire up your DVR.
It's time for your TV tip-off.
On Saturday, the comedy drama Looking concludes with a 90-minute film to wrap up Loose Ends, starring Jonathan Groff and Frankie J. Alvarez, starting at 10/9 Central on HBO. Tuesday, the classic sketch comedy Mad TV returns with new episodes on a new network and an all-new cast, but frequent guest spots from classic characters. Check out the new season starting Tuesday at 9, 8 Central on the CW. And that's your TV tip-off on iHeartRadio.
We're back. It's the Word on the Street, the name of our show here. The second hour will kick this throughout the summer months. We expect that the Canandaigua National American Trust High School Sports Show will be back again for a 14th season this fall. Be talking with folks in the bank about that very soon. My name is Jeff DeVeronica from the Democrat and Chronicle. An in-studio guest is a legend in broadcasting in Rochester. The Guinness Book will tell you that he's not the record holder, but we'll get into that. Don Elhart is our guest from 13 WHAM TV. Don, thanks for coming down
to
the studio.
Great to be here. Great to be here this morning.
You know, the role of the media, I just read something this morning. Jon Favreau, obviously very big in Hollywood, from acting to producing. I think he was the producer on the Iron Man movies. He tweeted something this morning. Time to start wondering whether the relentless promotion of mass shootings by TV news is part of the problem. And obviously the word promotion versus reporting is a difference there. And I understand what he's saying, but we have to report the news, right? Mm. We can't bury our heads in the sand.
We can't ignore it. And yet, I think we do have an obligation not to overemphasize it at times. And in this competitive world today of media,
on-demand news.
Yeah,
really.
On-demand news. It is very easy for people to try to claim coverage to build their coverage. And I think we have to be careful. We can't ignore, obviously, what's going on, but we have to realize, too, every time we put it on, we may inspire someone. It was interesting to me the other night in watching the convention coverage. There was one protester, and I was looking at three or four different networks, a couple of them almost in the very similar to sports. If something happens a lot of times in the sporting event, we never see it. We'll hear, oh, there's a little disturbance going on.
We're not
going
to show it.
Some guy ran on the field, but we're not going to give him the satisfaction of showing him on the air. And so we'll tell you that it's happening. And some networks did that. You know, Donald Trump was speaking. Some just said there's something going on. Some showed this protester. Some dwelled on it a little more. So it, I think it comes down sometimes to a decision of who is producing, who is directing, what is happening. But I think we have to realize sometimes when we do overemphasize that, then we encourage people to try to do the same. A lot of people make the argument, and sometimes, you know, not to repeat over and over again the names of some of the people that, that commit these heinous crimes. Refer to it, mention who it, you know, mention they did it. But every time we kind of say their name again, we glorify them.
The fame. So, and you don't want to inspire the copycats.
Yeah, it's a very fine line. We don't want to walk away from our responsibility of journalists of telling everything that there is to tell. But sometimes we have to kind of walk that fine line to say, let's tell it. Let's not overtell it to the point where we're sensationalizing.
And it's one thing I've always tried to tell students, and I think in my own line of work, whenever I do a story, have I been fair to those I'm talking about, those I'm writing about? And I think it's the same in your industry. Yeah. And we don't relish. I remember some people got after me after I had to write that Abby Wambach got a DWI, and they said, how can you write that? I'm like, it's the news. I have to write it. You know, I don't relish writing it. We don't relish.
No.
Again, you show me a journalist that relishes kicking somebody while they're, I shouldn't say, that likes the negative stories. And I'll tell you, that's maybe somebody that I'm not, that might be in the business for the wrong reasons.
And again, that's fine line. You know, there is a lot of what we've talked about, the watchdog journalism now, where we want to hold people accountable. And I think that's part of our growing responsibility now. Because when I started in this business, if you, and I've done this with tours coming through, and especially college students, I say, how many grew up in a home that watched the 6 o'clock news every night? And most of their hands will go up. Then I will say, how many of you watch the 6 o'clock news every night now? And nobody raises their hands. And if they do, they've got a phone in it where they really found out first what was happening. So we, I think, have to approach television news now, to a large extent of saying, and yes, I'm telling people what happened today, but I have to assume that most of them that are watching probably already know this.
It's one reason I say the game story is becoming a dying piece of work in journalism, because the people are watching the game or they're following on social media. They know what's happened. So if you're going to write a game story now, it really has to focus on what happened on this critical. It really has to dig deeper into what happened in the game or you know, a lot of times we'd like to go, if we're going to go to a game now, we'll try to write like maybe a mini profile on a person that maybe won the game or the difference in the game, and that's really the change of it. All right, now, a couple weeks ago, you guys were on the air as this protest was happening, and a couple of your colleagues were, I guess now we can say, erroneously arrested as potential protesters, and that happening on the air, boy, I was just listening to Matt Lauer in an interview saying that in this world now where there's a lot of misinformation out there, whether you're on social media, you have to be careful about what you're saying, what you're seeing, and how you're reporting it. How challenging was that night for you based on the 50 years you've been on the air? Was that one of the more challenging nights?
It was very challenging. Obviously, you know, Kelsey Smith had already been on the air from 10 until 11 on Fox. I then joined her at 11 o'clock for what normally is a 35-minute newscast. We went till 1:30 in the morning.
Wow.
We stayed on the air because we felt an obligation to the viewers to bring this to some conclusion. For most of that time, there was a line of Rochester police officers moving down East Avenue people being arrested that got in the way. And we wanted to see what the resolution was going to be. By the time we signed off at 1:30, East Avenue was open again. Cars were moving. We had completed our job. The frustration was that for most of that time, we had no information other than our reporter down there on the scene. Jennifer Lee was there with, and you have to understand the technicalities of this, and people don't. We've got what is called a live view unit now. It's probably like a student backpack. If you think of something of that size, the photographer wears that on their back, carries a camera on their shoulder, and we are able to broadcast live. We don't need the trucks. We don't need a satellite. We use cell phone, a combination of cell phone signals, and that keeps us on the air.
So Jennifer and a photographer were doing that.
So Jennifer and a photographer are doing that. Now, if you are a police officer, you see the photographer with a camera on his shoulder and Jennifer holding a microphone. So that's a clearly identifiable journalist. And she was the only one we had out there for a while. I, from my technical perspective, very much aware that when the battery dies on that unit, our coverage is done.
Right.
So we made sure we got extra batteries, extra equipment down there. Now, at this time, she's the only one there. And we reach out to anyone on staff. It's a Friday night. It's not easy, as you would think. I mean,
late.
If I'm a reporter and I'm out on a Friday night, I'm probably not going to rush to my phone when I see the station calling. Carla Claire did. Justin Carter, who was one of our newer reporters, it was his birthday. He was out celebrating his birthday, happened to be downtown. So they said, we'll respond.
Help. We'll help, yeah.
So they respond, but the only equipment they have are their iPhones.
Which we were discussing before we got in the studio about how great the cameras are on these things.
So with Facebook Live, we're able to put their pictures on the air. So we stay on the air, not only with the camera that Jennifer Lee has, but with the two phones that Carlette and Justin are using to show us what's happening.
And that explains a little bit. People are confused. Well, why weren't they wearing station all this stuff?
Yeah, they were. Carlette had a golf shirt that I have on today, which doesn't really, you may have all the logos, but people can get a shirt for a logo, so that doesn't identify you. Justin was, wearing shorts and a golf shirt because he was out, it was a Friday night. So they were in the street, and documenting some of these arrests, and then we're told everybody had to get out onto the sidewalk, which they did. They were then detained and put in handcuffs while they were on the sidewalk. When I saw that happen, there's a number of thoughts going through my mind. One, I think just on pure emotion, these are two coworkers. So I think probably I'm probably so even keeled most of the time for me to even raise my voice. And I said, where's the mayor? Where's the police chief? Meaning, where's the information that we need right now?
Why aren't we hearing from the city of Rochester?
And not only that, you've just taken two of my three cameras, quote unquote, out of commission. So now we're back.
Where are those batteries? Did you give them to Jennifer?
And at the time, we fully understood. I fully understood from a police point of view. And this is probably where I've taken a burn to some of the criticism that I've received. I fully understand why a police officer would not recognize these two people. Justin has only been in the market a few weeks. I fully understand it. They fully understand that. I think in the frustration of trying to control that situation, you get people out of the street, this can happen. I think we all learned from it. We've learned. We probably need a little better identification as media, whether we're casually or not. So that we need to look at that and put it in perspective. So at the time when I asked, where's the mayor, where's the police chief, what I was really saying is, where's the information we need to tell people
to cover the story,
what's going on?
And by covering it, I mean, this is what people sometimes, some people might say, well, they stayed on the air till 1:30 because they're looking for ratings. You were doing, to me, a public service. Yeah. To, again, not the people in Webster or Geneseo or wherever in your viewing audience, but the people in the city of Rochester that live downtown, here's what's happening, and you should steer clear of that area until things are settled down.
And that's where the frustration was for us, not being able to tell our viewers much more than what we were seeing at any given moment. And it was different. I mean, to see the police in riot gear marching in a line down the street. And at some point, I found that to be very effective. I thought the police, I was commenting, saying, this is a good show of force. Now, you can argue, as the protesters did, they didn't need riot gear. They didn't. My point of view at that point was the police were making a point. They were showing that they were not going to tolerate people sitting in the street. You know, you have a right to assemble. You have a right to go on the sidewalk. There's no one that's going to dispute, you know, your freedoms in this country to express your point of view. But at that point, they were saying, you can do all of this, but you can't sit in the street and block traffic. And so, you know, it's a...
When the protesting starts to affect businesses, mm-hmm. other residents, other consumers in the market, then it stops being a friendly or civil yeah. protest when you're doing things yeah. that are... Again, you have the right to protest. I get it. But the combative nature of some people toward police or people in authority really is and yeah. people that think that because they have an iPhone and they can tape somebody.
Yeah.
There was some news story a few months ago where there was a man in our town that was, I think an officer was he was parked on the side of the street mm-hmm. and the resident was saying, I can stand, and the officer said, you might want to get out of the middle of the street. And he's like, I can stand in this street. I'm a taxpayer. I own part of this street just like you. Don't tell me where to go. Who are you to tell me where to go? And he's like, I'm just telling you for your own safety to get out yeah. of the street. And it just turned way yeah. too combative.
And you know what happens now, too? There's kind of this anger. People want, I think, sometimes to have
the confrontation.
Yeah, I mean to express their anger so that if we're on the air and we make any point, people will turn that around and say, well, he's anti-police because he was doing this, or he's anti the Black Lives Matter. I think if nothing else, we've tried to be very objective in presenting what happens. And when you look at, I think if you look back on most of the coverage that night, we were merely describing what was happening, and expressing a little frustration. And I dare say anyone in any situation, if you were looking at a live picture and saw two of the people you work with every day with handcuffs behind their back, if you didn't react with some emotion, what kind of a coworker would you be?
A person are you? Yeah, yeah, in person, so just a person. I'm thinking as you're talking about that, I'm thinking to myself, boy, in my family yeah. and in my friends, I was trying to think if I've known anybody that has ever been put in handcuffs.
Yeah. And it's got to be that's got to be a very emotional moment for someone. I mean, yeah, someone in the media may know that, you know, once they realize who I am, this may be over.
We're going to be okay.
You
know, yeah,
but to put your hands behind your back, to be put in handcuffs or the Ziplocs or whatever it is, and then and have your, you know, empty your pockets, turn it, that's a scary situation to be put through. Understandably, if they weren't identified as media, we understand that point of view too. And I sat down with the mayor the next day, and I think we all came to an agreement that, yes, you know, we can do a better job at identifying.
You were in a room with the mayor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
We sat down the next day on Monday and talked about it. And I think they realized, in fact, they apologized for the arrest of our reporters. And I thought, you know, in a way, we can all apologize for how things turned out. But the police were doing their job. Their job that night is to clear the street no matter who's in the way. And yes, two of our reporters got caught in that shuffle. But they learned from that. We learned from that. And we were already taking steps to better identify our reporters and make sure, even when casually addressed, we have some identification that isn't something you could reproduce on your inkjet.
Yeah, I usually keep my lanyard with my DNC ID yeah. in my vehicle just yeah. in case. And I make a point that if I'm going out of town or something, I mean, that I have it with me, yeah. just in case I say I'm somewhere and I need to be jump into action. I didn't say out of town. If I go to Ohio, I'm not yeah. going to be carrying my ID. But in case I need to serve as a reporter, I yeah. need to have that. So I'm not going to be waving my laptop up. So hey, don't you know? So all right, we're yeah. talking with Don Elhart. Let's talk on the other side. We'll take our second break. We're going to talk about some bright spots,
okay.
which I think are fantastic. I want to talk about the roadie, and I really want to talk about your love for this town, because you had chances to leave and you didn't do it. So, and I'm sure you probably still could have chances to leave too. But we're talking with Don Elhart. This is Word on the Street. My name is Jeff DeVeronica from the Democratic Chronicle, and you're listening to Fox Sports 1280.
Now, this week's top TV TV stream. All right, what is it you guys are watching on TV this week? Kicking off the countdown at number 10, and by the way, it is one of three versions of the show on your countdown. The Real Housewives of New York, The Fosters are at number 9, Mr. Robot is at number 8, we got Preacher at number 7, The Ever-Attractive Men in Suits at number 6, at number 5 is The Last Ship. Number 4, another episode of The Real Housewives, this time of Orange County. The Bachelorette is on number 3. Most people supporting that show are probably my guy friends. Yes, I'm not kidding. I know more guys who watch that show than women. At number 2 is The Real Housewives of New Jersey. And at number 1, one of your favorite families to watch ever, Keeping Up with the Kardashians. All right, guys, that's what you've been watching on TV. I'll catch you next week.
That's this week's top TV stream.
Sports talk on the radio is a lot like Tinder.
Smoking hot.
If you don't like us, one flick of the finger.
Ugly.
And we're gone.
Ugly.
Goodbye.
We're constantly seeking your approval.
I like people that like me.
The main difference is that you're not going to meet your radio at a bar and have sex with it.
You and I are going to disagree on this, I think.
At least I hope not. But I do believe it was Kevin Garnett who once said,
anything's possible!
Anything is possible. This is Rochester's Fox Sports 1280.
A star.
Who let the dogs out?
We're back on Word on the Street. That actually always reminds me of Rhinos matches. They used to play that when they scored goals at Frontier Field. Jeff D. Veronica here for the Democratic Chronicle. In studio guest on Word on the Street. 13 WHAM anchor and Rochester legend, broadcasting legend, Don Elhardt is here. And Don, one thing I think, I'm glad we did got a chance to discuss that about 2 weeks ago when the protesters or whenever it was. But what I think will be your legacy of those bright spots. And just give us a snapshot of what the one that was on last night to me is a great example of what you and this is your baby. This bright spot was your idea.
This was something, Marv Jacoby, who was a friend of mine in Rochester Rotary and also out of the JCC, years and years ago, just said to me, you know, you ought to have, there's so much trouble in the world, you ought to have a little bright spot every day. And he just said, a bright spot. And I thought, you know, he's right. And we'll call it the bright spot. You know, not certainly an original name. Bright spot's been used before, but instead of just saying a bright spot, we call it the bright spot. And I said, and I remember the time, at that time, I said, just to the producers and the news directors, just give me a minute at the end of the news each day so that whatever's been on the newscast, we can talk about the good things that people are doing for each other. That's kind of the premise we really started out with. It should spotlight someone who is doing something for someone else. Or have done something throughout their lifetime. So we did that for a while. There were obviously changes over the years, and people said, oh, you know, we don't have enough time. We got to put more time in news. So it's reduced a little bit now to, you know, 20, 25 seconds. But I encourage people, send in a picture, send in, you know, in this day and age, we can put a bright spot together without sending a crew out. So this week, I was invited to the 100th birthday for Mary Rose Cario out in Geneseo. Millie is her nickname. And it happened to be right about this time. I said, well, gee, I can't come out on Saturday. I've got to do the radio show. I've got another obligation. But I said to the family, I said, can I just stop out and meet her some night this week? She turned 100 on Wednesday. On Thursday, on what I call my lunch hour, my dinner hour, 7 o'clock, I just drove to Geneseo, met her, and found out, A, what a fantastic sports fan she is. She's got more Bills memorabilia, a signed autograph from Phil Mickelson, a bunch of other things.
Wow.
And took her some gifts, a baseball hat from 13 and a mug and a copy of our golden anniversary DVD. And we had a wonderful conversation. And while I was there with my iPhone, just took some video of her, did a brief interview with her. And when I got back to the station, I said, you know, I have enough here that we can make a bright spot out of it. So last night, on the air, our bright spot was on Millie, and talking about what she has done throughout her life, the community service she did for the fire department and, the church and the community and really what her life is all about. And that's kind of the premise of it. And I think there's always time every day to find time to show that bright spot. Even on 9/11, I remember when 9/11 happened and, the producer said, well, you know, obviously we're going to drop the bright spot today. It's a terrible day. I said, no,
We need that.
We need a bright spot.
Maybe
today.
More than ever.
Well, how are you going to find a bright spot today? And we ended the newscast with probably one of the most moving bright spots of people putting up flags in their yard, of people reaching out to help people. The way our nation responded to the tragedy became the bright spot within all of us. So whatever the day is, you know, we try. There are some days where we kind of look around for one and maybe it isn't there. Friday's Child that we've done with the Children Awaiting Parents over the years, we make our bright spot on Fridays, and I've done that since the late 1970s, where we have featured every Friday a child, sometimes with special needs, that is looking for a permanent home that may be in foster care. And we've been able to help Children Awaiting Parents place some of those children and many of those children in loving homes. So it's a good feeling. If you can, and I've always said that, you know, when you put a newscast together, you can fill it with whatever you want. Viewers who watch that show are going to remember the first thing they saw when they started the show, and probably the most they're going to remember is the last thing they saw. It's what we all do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you put all the news in there, but if the last thing you offer people is something uplifting, I think that's got to be a positive influence on them.
Speaking of uplifting, when you're around town, people recognize you, and I know we discussed this during the story. Your wife said people sometimes are a little afraid to approach you, but yeah, they think they're going to bother you. You don't mind that.
No.
And I've always, in getting to know you a little bit, I really respect how you don't act any different than any broadcaster I've met in my life.
I forget about it. I mean, I really do. You know, all of a sudden, there's this one woman that sees me every day when I go to work out, and I think she's kidding, but I don't know. She's in that kind of a, you know, she looks at me with a big smile. She goes, "Did anybody ever tell you you look a lot like Don Elhart?" and she says that every time. And I say, and I'm at the point now, I go, you know, a lot of people tell me that. You know, I don't know whether, I don't know if she's kidding. I got to really have a conversation with her at some point. But, you know, it is, I think that's the beauty of doing what we do, to be able to interact with people. I think those are the, when people come up to me and then apologize, and I go, no, take a picture, have some fun. I remember when I was a kid, the thrill I got meeting people. My father ran an appliance and hardware store, and when Clarabelle the Clown came from the Howdy Doody show, it was the biggest thrill for me. When Otto Graham came,
mm-hmm,
and they blocked off Culver Road, and he threw a pass to me and kind of gave me a little lesson on how to throw a spiral. I will cherish
that's
that.
That's one of the details I didn't get in that story.
I should have shared that picture. I found that picture after you wrote the story, a picture of me and Otto Graham with a football, which is really, you know, for those that know my sports ability, probably the funniest picture you'll ever have. But, you know, that. So I remember the thrill it gave me. If in some small way I can make somebody feel a little better, you know, simply by being with them or doing something for them. I mean, I've always, my father brought me up in that you know, era of scripture in the Bible where it says, go the extra mile. If one person asks you to go a mile, go with them too. And that has been a cornerstone for me. I did a whole speech once based on an incident that happened in Australia where a friend of mine, Pete Kellerhaus, we were in Australia for a Rotary convention, and we were at the sanctuary for the koalas. And Peter's this kind of guy that always is looking to help people, especially children. And he looked, and this one young man, sneaker was untied. And Peter, without thinking, just kneels down and ties the kid's sneaker. And while he's down, the mother of the little boy says, "Hey, while you're down there, tie a double knot." And that became the genesis for a speech that I gave many times of, if someone asks you to do something, do a little more. Because it's much more fun. If someone says, so-and-so is having 100th birthday, could you send them a card? I will get the people together on the set and we'll do a video and make it a little more special.
Sure.
Because, and I just get, you know, it's almost selfish in a way because you feel better for doing it.
Yeah.
So I always try to say, you know, whatever someone asks you to do, not only do it, try to find some little extra thing you can do to say, I didn't mind doing this. In fact, to show you that I wanted to do a little more because that's, you know, makes me feel as good as you.
And whether it's a handshake or posing for a picture or mm-hmm. a bright spot, I know that I feel that when somebody sends me an email saying the story I wrote about their kid yeah. or that to me makes all those days where I got to maybe deal with the parent or the coach that's not yeah. happy about our coverage. I say you just made my day,
mm-hmm.
Because so many people are critical to media. So when we, and that's why I get into this business. I get into yeah. it because I want to impact people's lives. And I'll tell people if it's a sensitive story and I admire their courage for telling me the story, I'll thank them and I'll say, appreciate mm-hmm. you trusting me to tell your story. Because maybe there's another person out there that mm-hmm. is struggling with what you're going through. And by reading about what you've done, it can help mm-hmm. them. And that's what I think ideally what I think journalists want to do is impact the world and largely in a positive yeah. way, not a negative way.
And I think, you know, if you don't mind me saying, I think that's one of the gifts you have is that gift of perception, because we sat through many interviews and talked before you did your article. And there were three or four things I can remember saying, gee, I said this or I said this. I hope he understood how I meant this, or I hope he. And when I read the article, I could see those instances where you correctly perceived exactly what I was thinking, and it made me feel good. And I think that's the key. I think to journalism, you know, it's one thing just to go out and gather the facts and write a story. It's quite another thing to pay attention to what you're doing, to understand the people that are in the story and where they're coming from, and then mold that and craft that into a journalistic piece that really sets apart from just that day-to-day coverage that we're so used to in many cases.
And that's what we need to do. We need mm-hmm. to tell more stories, be it on your yeah. air or the Democrat Chronicle in print or on our website. We're storytellers, mm-hmm. and that's why we got into it. Breaking news has got the adrenaline pumping, yeah. and if you lose that adrenaline, then maybe it's time to get out of the business. But it is. Yeah. It's interesting to me, and it still is. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about was your family mm-hmm. and the challenges, because people think, well, it's all glamorous, right?
Yeah.
And we talked in the piece about how the sacrifices you had to make mm-hmm. because you work at night, and people don't understand that, and they think, you know, oh, Jeff, you're a sports reporter. It's all fantastic. Yeah, well, I got to work my share at Saturday night, yeah. too, covering ball games or going out and doing stories, and it's not – it's there are sacrifices you make in yeah. your line of work.
I think just that night shift itself, you know, I'm used to it now, but, you know, as we've talked before, growing up, it's a challenge for a family. When you've got three young kids that are in school and, you know, one or two nights a week, you come home for dinner, but by the time you're home, it's 7 o'clock after you've done the 6 o'clock news, when they normally might eat dinner at 5:30 or 6 and then go out and play with their friends. Dad's coming home at 7 o'clock, and that's going to be the family dinner hour for that particular night.
And you said something that resonated with me in my life circumstance mm-hmm. now about your wife and
yeah.
the parenting that goes on from the primary caregiver, yeah. so to speak, with your children, and it was your wife, and
yeah.
how important a role she played, because there are times when we can't be there.
Yeah, and she had that burden all the time. Still carries it, because a lot of the time, you know, I'm still working that night shift. So she is probably still the main communicator with each of our three children. And probably closer in many respects.
And they have all day, they have day jobs, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so you're at night in the evening when those FaceTimes are yeah. coming in, or you're not there.
We're trying to, you know, when a grandchild has a birthday in Albany and we're trying to coordinate the conference call, there, I think the last one I was going through the car wash at Delta Sonic, and you know, she was home, and we did a conference call with our grandson, and you know, wished him a happy birthday. And, you know, what's that sound in the background? Oh, it's just, I'm going through the dryer now. You know, I'll be right back.
And one other thing before we go to break, I want to mention is that it struck me as, you know, we talk about, I feel a little similar to you in regard to the journalism part, but the way you took videos your entire, all your children,
yeah,
all their
yeah.
lives, right? And now it's a lot easier for me with my iPhone, but people told me for the first 2 years of my daughter's life, don't take her to Disney and waste the money. She'll never remember. And I said, she'll remember it. I'm going to make a video, and I'm
yeah.
going to put it on my YouTube channel, and she'll watch it her entire life.
Yeah.
So she'll remember meeting Cinderella when she was 22 months old, because I got it right here. And that's what I do all the time. I have a 4th of July video I just got done putting together for our family. And it's neat that, you know, and I wish I had some of those. And my dad just wasn't his thing. So we'll come back to one more segment with Don Elhart. I want to talk about the greatness of Rochester, New York. I want to talk about the Rotary and what you've done there. And it's been fantastic so far. We got some time left with 13 Wham broadcasting legend Don Elhart. My name is Jeff DeVeronick from the Democratic Chronicle, and you're listening to Fox Sports 1280.
Jack Palvino here. There's a lot of collision repair shops in town, but there's only one my family will ever go to. That's Long Pond Auto Body in Greece. Find out why. Visit longpondautobody.com.
It's nothing but hot deals and huge savings all month long at Fusillo Kia. Hey folks, Caroline here at Fusillo Kia of Greece. Huge savings right now on the 2016 Kia Sorento. Right now, zero down $289 a month. MSRP is $27,425 right now. Zero down, that's nothing out of pocket. $289 a month on a brand new 2016 Kia Sorento. Just an example of the savings and selection you can find. Log on to FusilloKiaGreece.com to check out the selection. Of course, if you'd like to apply for financing, there's no better place than HugeKiaCredit.com. You can log on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which is also when you can shop us here at Fusillo Kia of Greece. This July, it's the hottest of huge.
36-month, 30,000-mile lease, 10,000 miles per year, 20 cents per mile over mile limit, 8% tax, zero due at signing. First monthly payment of $289,595, acquisition fee plus tax, tags, and DMV fees included in payment structure. $3,400 Kia lease cash applied. $400 disposition fee, no early termination fee. No security deposit required. Offer with approved credit through Kia Motor Finance. Paris is excluded to dealer for details. Pricing available from July 1st, 2016 through July 31st, 2016.
At RochesterForLess.com, you can pick up half-price gift certificates to some of Rochester's best restaurants, salons, spas, and merchants. Every week at Rochester.
We're back on the Word on the Street. My name is Jeff DeVeronica from the Democrat Chronicle. Sitting in Soccer Sam is on assignment, being a grandparent with his son trying out for soccer. And in-studio guest is 13 Wham anchor, associate news director, Don Elhart, broadcasting legend. And Don, before we go to Rotary, have you heard from the folks at Guinness at all regarding the broadcaster in Texas who got the award for being on the air the longest?
I can't remember his name now. I forgot already.
Yeah, I've forgotten too. We're like a week after the story came out. This gentleman in Texas was awarded for being on the air the longest.
In Houston, he has been on the air 50 years as of November. So he has claimed the longest career in broadcast journalism.
In the same market at the same station.
Same market, same station. And
so you got him by 5 months.
Yeah, when we first heard about him, we were having breakfast. My wife was reading it and said, "Houston, we have a problem." But you know,
good headline.
I think some people have pursued it, but obviously with the Guinness, I think most anyone can be in the Guinness book if you make out the application, pay the fee, and claim some category, you're gonna get in there. So I thought we might have a little fun with it, but I think he's pretty serious. So.
He doesn't want the title taken away.
I guess you could, I mean, he's probably could claim they've had the same call letters for all of his 50 years, because I started with WOKR.
It's been
Channel 13 for 50 years, but maybe I had, 9, 10, 12 owners? I can't remember.
The old Guinness loophole.
Yeah, so I think there's probably going to be, but what I thought was going to be kind of maybe a little fun experience, I may be a little more serious to him. So we may never, claim that.
There's
record,
bigger fish to fry in the world, right? If it's gonna anger somebody, why bother pursuing it? So let's talk about the Rotary. You're a past Rotary president, and people. Rotary is one of those things where people say, "What is Rotary?" Not everybody knows what Rotary is.
I think probably a few years ago, and probably to some extent now, if you ask people, what is a Rotary Club? And they would say 10 to 15 old men with gray hair getting together for dinner once a week. And they do some good things, but I'm not really sure what
that is. Yeah.
And that's the image that the Rotary has been challenged with for a number of years. It's an image that really has changed now. They have embraced millennials. They've embraced social media. And Rotary has really committed to it. So I was president of the Rochester Rotary Club in 1987 and 88. And it was probably the end of the year or the next year when, and again, it was all men. It was a men's service organization.
Oh, it was literally defined.
It was a men's service organization. We saw the world was changing, and I think probably one of the proudest moments in Rotary for me was I was president of our club when we admitted the first woman member, Elizabeth Pine, a very distinguished judge in our community. Her father had been in Rotary. Her husband had been in Rotary. And we took the step even before Rotary opened up the doors for women graciously. We kind of took the step on our own in a bold way to be the first Rotary club to admit a woman as a member.
And now the new president's a woman.
And the new president, Donna Deedy, who's the head of the School of Holy Childhood and a former broadcaster, a good friend, is a woman and president of our club now. And the whole club, I think, has changed. The power that women have brought to the organization and the young people that are beginning now to see this is a good vehicle to do good in the world, which is really the model.
I know they run camps. Rotary runs camp. Is it Camp Hockamo?
Camp Hockamo was there were two camps in the community. One, the Rotary Sunshine Camp, which our club ran solely. Then Camp Hockamo, which was out in Penfield. When that land was sold, Camp Hockamo now takes part in a two-week session out at the Sunshine Campus in Rush.
Okay.
And the camp that that we have run, we've kind of changed the name from camp to campus. We still have a program that is run by the club, but Muscular Dystrophy has a program out there. The Diabetes Association has a program for campers. And so it brings together during the summer young campers who have similar challenges. So the week of diabetes, all the kids. I mean, think about this. If you're a youngster with diabetes and you go to school, you might be the only kid that is testing their blood or doing something a little different. And you're conscious, self-conscious about that. You go to summer camp out at the Rotary Sunshine Campus, everybody has diabetes.
Mm-hmm. You're like everyone else.
The most powerful story I ever remember a father telling, and he was in tears. He came to Rotary and he said, I didn't, my child had never been away. She had diabetes, and she wanted to go to this camp, and we just figured after a day or two she was going to call and we're going to have to bring her home.
Mm-hmm.
She's never been away from home. We're very reluctant to do that. We let her go to the camp. We didn't hear from her the whole week. Picked her up, had a wonderful week at camp, and they go home, and they're having dinner. And the father, as is the usual procedure at dinner, after dinner said, to his daughter, it's time for me to give you your insulin shot. And she looked up at him and said, Dad, you don't have to do that anymore.
She's
good. I learned how to do that for myself at summer camp. And he just broke down. What that enabled their family to do from then on was made possible by that camp. So it really is a thrill to me. The treehouse was built last year. I wrote a children's book, which is getting some traction within our club, a children's story about the animals that got together, to build this treehouse. But what it has done for people with challenges, especially physical challenges, it's a camp that was built from the ground up to meet their needs. So if you want a treehouse, we have it's like a walkout level for a home. You roll your wheelchair up this ramp. But by the time you get to the house itself, that portion of it is well above the tree line. So people in wheelchairs can experience that. There's a climbing wall. And we take the kids out of the wheelchairs and hook them up with special harnesses. They experience at that camp everything a camper would ever want to do at a summer camp. A pool that has ramps leading into it, so they're out of the wheelchair into a special water wheelchair that works for them. If people have a chance to see that, I think they really appreciate what it does. So the Rochester Rotary Club has always sponsored that, and now the other clubs in Monroe County sponsored the Hackamo Week. They used to have a railroad, beautiful railroad out at Hackamo, and they brought that, they moved it all out to the Sunshine Campus. So there's a train now that you can ride, and it's a great partnership. It's brought Rotarians together, not only from our club, but throughout the county.
And that's going to be there long after we're all gone.
Oh,
this is great.
Yeah.
A couple of minutes left. Give me a couple of favorite Rochester things that you and your wife like to do, or you and your family like to do You know, what's a favorite? Mm. I was down in Bushnell's Basin last night, took a boat ride on the canal with my cousin, and it was so picturesque and gorgeous down at Bushnell's Basin. There, people were packed at Abbott's. There was this duck drop thing over on Shone Place in Pittsford. I'd never seen that before. I thought, I actually almost pulled out my iPhone and wanted to, I was going to do a story on it because they drop all these plastic ducks and there's a race. I'd never heard of it. And I'm like, people would click on this
story.
And
that was a fight. They almost lost that this year.
Really?
They did, there was, the Gaming Association pointed out that you can't hold a raffle unless it's on your property and you can't hold it on what is state property. And the Erie Canal is state property. So that all of these clubs have been violating state law.
Gambling, essentially.
Senator Rich Funke was introducing legislation to change it. A couple other people did. And then Governor Cuomo just kind of took the bull by the horns and said to the Gaming Commission, we have to correct this. And so they've obviously allowed this to happen so that people could do that.
So any
I think some of those fun activities, you know, I think. You mentioned Abbott's. That's got to be one of the.
You go to my location, Empire Boulevard one. And, I was told your son told me that. Yeah,
You know, that's the one out in Webster's. Always great. We were talking before about Donuts Delight with Salvatore's. I think I don't want to make this
you
all.
You grew
about
up down
food.
The road from there, right?
Culver Parkway. Grew up in the city, and my dad had the appliance and hardware store.
Do you go to many Red Wings games? Any sporting events?
I haven't been, and I should. I should go to more. I think, we were talking about renovating the Blue Cross Arena, and I said, I can't remember the last time I was there for an event. So I've got to get out and do a little more. So I'm not a big one for crowds. So whenever there's a situation, whether it's a festival or a large crowd, and you have to wait in line.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I'm not a wait in line guy, so that's tough.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in studio today, Don. It's been a pleasure. And thanks for all the help with the story, too. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. Wish you and your family a great rest of the summer.
Thank you so much, and great to be here. And again, thanks for a very wonderful article. It really brought together that half century of service.
Don Ehlhardt, thanks again. 13 WHAM TV. My name is Jeff DeVeronica from the DNC. Have a great weekend, folks.